You're listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I'm joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer, who's calling in from Skype this week because he couldn't make it in to the podcast studio. How's it going, Michael?
Reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, you've been gone for a couple of weeks. You know, we got literally tens of emails asking where you were. Yeah, what's going on? Are you ensconced in your in your underground compound in an undisclosed location? What's going on?
Yes, I am incredibly fearful of Trump 2016.
Well, you know,
I am now in hiding.
Yeah, I suspect the demand for bomb shelters are going to be much greater.
Mm-hmm.
Much greater.
Yes, especially when he announces Omarosa as his running mate.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Yeah, this is one wacky, but
2016, it's gonna be huge.
This has been one entertaining election. I gotta say,
it really has.
I mean, in my lifetime, I've never seen any other election that has been this entertaining. And I think we owe it all to Mr. Fancy Hair Trump.
Yep,
you'll fire.
Culminating in the spectacular Funny or Die video, Donald Trump presents The Art of the Deal, the movie.
No, oh, I haven't seen that.
You need to.
It's
amazing.
I will have
Johnny
to do
Depp
that.
Plays Donald Trump, and you cannot recognize him at all.
Oh my God. Is this a recent thing?
Yeah.
Really?
It just posted it a few days ago.
I am going to download that as soon as we finish tonight. In fact, screw this podcast. I'm going to go check this out. No, I'm just kidding. So what's going on this week? Apparently Apple has screwed over some people.
Yeah.
Or so they say.
So there's now actually a class action lawsuit brewing against Apple for the very descriptive error 53. Which is a complete brick error. Like the phone will not work at all. And the reason for this error is that people got third-party repairs on their iPhone 6 or 6S where the screen was replaced, and that includes the Touch ID sensor. So the problem is when an iPhone is built, when an iPhone with Touch ID is built, the secure enclave is paired with the Touch ID sensor in order to achieve total security over the entire flow.
Yes.
To prevent tampering. So
that all makes sense.
The secure enclave, when it boots up, it goes, hey, is the Touch ID sensor the one that I was built with? Yes. Okay. Continue. If the answer is no, error 53 fires and the phone just stops working. And that's what is happening when people go in for these third-party repairs and get new Touch ID sensors.
Error 53 sounds like a government cover-up. Error 53. It's a cover-up.
Your phone has been shut down due to error 53.
And it's run.
What's error 53? I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
It's run by the cigarette smoking man.
Yes.
So apparently, a lot of people are pissed off. Did they hire Saul Goodman for this class action lawsuit?
No, they have. It is Seattle-based law firm Fow Cochran Tetis Amala.
You're making this up. You're making this up.
I wish I was making it up. No, that is their name. PCVA for short.
So I guess my question is, why would you take your phone to a non... Why would you trust your phone, put it that way, with a non-authorized Apple dealer?
Well, I think...
Or is this only affecting non-authorized dealers, or is this like... even authorized dealers, but they're doing, because I know authorized Apple dealers can do repairs, can they? I don't know if that's legal or not, but I'm pretty sure that exists.
As far as I'm aware, this is third-party repairs. And licensed Apple dealer would be a second-party vendor.
Ah, okay.
Authorized to make repairs.
Got it. Okay.
So they would likely have whatever tools the Apple Store has in order to be able to replace the screen without breaking the phone. Obviously, there is some kind of procedure because people do get their screens replaced and their iPhones still continue to work. So the problem is when you go to some fly-by-night place that's like, oh, yeah, slip us $50. We'll replace the whole screen, whatever. That's where the problem is coming in. And I think it's just a matter of people not understanding that these devices are incredibly complex now
and delicate.
And in order to get a satisfactory repair, you need to take it in to an authorized vendor, whether it's the Apple Store or somewhere that's been licensed by Apple. Otherwise, you are going to run into unintended consequences, such as this error. So I think people just need to be really careful. And when in doubt, just go to the Apple Store.
Yeah.
It might cost more, but...
Well, the thing is... The glass
repair is going to be successful.
The glass repair is, like, what, $150? I mean, I wouldn't say it's inexpensive, but...
No.
I have seen third-party glass repairs that are around the $75 to $100 mark. So honestly, for an extra $50, people, just take it to Apple. I mean, obviously, I understand there are areas that cannot be serviced by Apple stores because perhaps they don't even exist in that area. So I understand why people are going to be pissed off about this because not everyone is, you know, not everyone is fortunate enough to have an Apple dealer in their town, let alone close enough that's convenient for them to go to. Like, what if you're in a city where an Apple store is 3 hours away? That's not really...
Well, I think that part of the argument is probably going away. Apple has a lot of Apple stores out there now. I wouldn't be surprised if most people in North America were within an hour of an Apple store. I think the only case where that might not be the case is if you're in a rural area.
Or what about overseas? I mean, Apple is just now trying to finalize the paperwork to open stores in India.
Yeah.
So what about Indian people that are taking their phones to get repaired? I mean, they're screwed.
The iPhone actually isn't... when did they start selling it?
I mean, the iPhone is sold in India, is it not?
I think it is.
It's like a relatively new thing within the last year,
I think. Relatively new, and I think they have a chain of licensed vendors that sell it and make repairs.
Okay. So maybe they aren't affected.
Well, I think anyone can theoretically be affected wherever there's a third-party repair shop.
Yes, yes.
And you decide to go there instead of Apple or a licensed repair store. So, I mean, it could be any country in the world, really. Like any country where iPhones are sold and there's like a gray market for repairs.
So, I mean, I understand why people are upset by this, but do you have a sense of where this is going to go? Now, obviously, I mean, disclaimer, neither of us are lawyers, but do you have a sense where this is going to go? Like where this is going to lead as far as like, will Apple lose? Or do you think they should win the case? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I believe that Apple would win because the iPhone user agreement or the iOS user agreement likely contains a passage that mentions for your device to work properly, you must do the following. And as part of those stipulations, one, make sure your software is up to date. Two, when taking your device for repairs, ensure that you're taking it to an Apple store or a Apple licensed retailer. Like, there's probably something in there that says that.
Right.
In which case, these people don't have a leg to stand on.
I don't know if they would ever do this, but I really believe that. Like, I'm kind of with you in that. I mean, it is within Apple's right to do this, but I really think that at the very least, as a courtesy, as a gesture of goodwill to customers, is that if the iPhone, well, even if the iPhone isn't within their warranty period, that they should at least acknowledge the repair and maybe give someone a discount towards, like, you know, if you show up to an Apple store, give us the receipt from your repair and we'll at least give you like a substantial discount and we'll maybe fix it for you or something.
Supposedly that is happening. According to Mac Rumors, they've heard from a retail source that certain Apple stores have received the go-ahead from Apple to replace third-party screens and other components in order to resolve the issue.
My sense is that Apple doesn't really intentionally want to screw over customers. They'd rather screw over the people that are doing the repair.
Customers happy. Customer sat is one of the most important stats.
I can't believe you just used that word. I can't believe you used that word.
Tim Cook says it. It's all right.
I'm gonna bleep that word. It's worse than a curse word. But you believe that that's actually happening?
I think so. I think ultimately, if people take these bricked iPhones in, the Apple Store will be able to help them.
Yeah.
Whether that's free of charge or at a discount.
I think at the minimum, it should be at a discount.
So far, it seems
like give them 50% off or something.
So far, it seems that it might be free.
Yeah. At least, I mean, if you're within the warranty period.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the things that's driving people to do these repairs in the first place.
Right.
That their phone is out of warranty.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I broke the glass. I mean, I don't know if you saw my phone when this happened, but I know I at least told you that I shattered the glass completely on my iPhone 6 and it cost me $150 to get it replaced at the Apple store. But, you know, it's not cheap, but it's like I have the peace of mind that it's done with a Apple authorized part, so I know it's going to be the exact same quality glass. And two, I'm in and out of there in like an hour. Like I dropped it off, I made the appointment, and they said, come back in an hour, you'll have a complete new front-facing piece to your phone.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, you know, so it's like, that was great.
Yeah, exactly. You always know you're going to get a good experience when you go to the Apple store. It might cost, but at the end of the day, you're going to get your phone back and it's going to work exactly like it did before.
I think it's very much akin to getting authorized repairs and authorized genuine OEM parts for vehicles as well. For example, like if you owned a BMW, you take it to your local, you know, Jiffy Lube, or I'm just making up a name here. Hopefully that's not an actual business. And I apologize if it is. Quickie Lube. I don't know. I'm just making up a name here. But you take it to your local your local garage, you're not gonna necessarily get authorized OEM parts. You may get OEM sort of like clone parts, which may or may not be up to the standards. Chances are, if it's like a BMW, you're not going to want that. If it's an old American car, those kind of things are usually fine because those parts are so cheap and ubiquitous. But like a BMW or a Mercedes, like I wouldn't feel comfortable taking my car just to save a few bucks, like to a local shop. I would take it to the dealer because I know it is being serviced by people that have been trained to work on those vehicles, and I know I'm getting authentic parts.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a really good metaphor. An iPhone is an incredibly intricate device now. You've got biometric security, you've got incredibly small camera assembly, you've got like half a laptop in there. they're just becoming ridiculously intricate. So, and the iFixit score for the iPhone keeps going down all the time. So these are not easy devices to repair.
No. No, I wouldn't want to work on it myself. I have a feeling if I opened up my iPhone and took it apart that I'd put it back together and I would be left over with like 20 screws. I'd be like, well, I guess that's still seems to be working. I guess I just optimized it. A month later, just crumbles to dust.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the moral of the story here is when in doubt, take it to an Apple store.
Indeed.
Don't go with someone who promises to solve all your problems for $50.
Yeah, exactly. There's certainly compromises to be made if that's going to happen. But I guess we don't really need to linger much longer on that. But there's some interesting stuff going on with the production of this new new Star Trek TV series that is being developed by CBS, I believe, which is going to be for the first time ever a streaming service on the CBS app, which I am not certain whether or not you need a cable subscription in order to act like, you know, one of those weird deals where it's like it's streaming,
I'm,
but if you
I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work, and I'm not even certain if it'll be available in Canada.
That's the thing that worries me.
So that's kind of up in the air at this point. I'm hoping that they'll actually air it on TV. I would think it'll get pretty good ratings, like a brand new Star Trek. That's going to draw people in. I mean, I would hope.
Now, I know there have been some fan favorite casting choices for the lead. I mean, at this point, I think it's, I mean, I know the show's not coming out till next year, but at this point, I don't think we really know anything about what the series is going to be about, right? Nor do we have any actual casting rumors, do we?
No, we don't, but
like, we don't even know if it's going to be a female captain. We don't know if it, like,
we don't, but the big news is, of course, that Brian Fuller, creator of Hannibal and Pushing Daisies, is going to be the showrunner for the new series, which is incredibly exciting news. I can think of nobody better to, in the current stable of TV people, to take care of it.
Yeah, it's a great choice. I mean, he's has a tremendous track record. Hannibal was amazing.
I still haven't finished it.
It's incredible. My only, just as an aside, like with Hannibal though, I think visually one of the most impressive shows I've ever seen. That's saying something.
Like the hallucinations and stuff with the stag imagery.
It's incredible. It's gorgeous. It is just, it may seem odd saying this, but I've never seen violence on screen look so beautiful.
Yeah, that is pretty much what Hannibal is.
And
violence turned into art.
And you know what? It almost feels like a piece of performance art.
I think that really speaks to Hannibal's character, really.
Sure.
Because he is a connoisseur of art, of performance, of theater.
And life.
Yeah. And so to portray the show in that light, really, it makes the entire show about him thematically and cinematographically. cinematographically? I don't know. God damn it.
Run with that. One of those.
So, somebody will correct me on the correct word to use there. But yes, everything about it is just, it just evokes his character.
Yeah.
So
I found the only thing is I found in the third season, and the other seasons definitely the other seasons in Hannibal definitely have very intricate and complex dialogue, but I personally found that this third season was just, it was, I find the dialogue just a little pretentious. Like, nobody talks like this. Like, it's so, but I kind of gave it a pass just because the dialogue is as, if you just look at, just sit back and look at the dialogue and look at the visuals, the two of them blend so beautifully together that even the dialogue is so, so poetic, and there's a certain cadence to it that is so, so intricate and so beautiful, just like the visuals of the show. But for me, it's a bit tiresome and a bit difficult to listen to for long periods of time, I find. And I, for some reason, the third season, it bothered me a little bit. And I don't know if it's because there, it was just more of that, or because I've been watching it for so long that the dialogue was just starting to irritate me. Because everyone, and it wasn't like, I can understand Hannibal, you know, because he's, you know, an incredibly intelligent man who just has like an incredible great view on life, an appreciation for the fine arts, impeccable taste. I mean, culinary wise, he's incredibly talented. But I can understand his character like sounding very eloquent and almost poetic, but all the other characters, even like Will Graham and I forget the name of the cop played by Lawrence Fishburne. But all those characters, they the way they interact with each other, the way they talk to each other, nobody talks like that in real life. That was my main issue. Anyways, I've derailed the conversation. So that part does concern me. I don't know if that's going to be an issue for Star Trek. I doubt it is, because Star Trek's a very different beast. You can't really treat it the same way, but...
And Brian Fuller actually wrote several episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard about
that. And Voyager.
I don't know what... Well, you know, Voyager is not all bad, okay? There are good episodes.
I know.
But I enjoy Deep Space Nine is by far my favorite Star Trek series.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure he'll do a good job. I'm sure he'll do a great job. But
and on that note, a while ago, when I think at one point he was trying to pitch a Star Trek series, and at that point he was suggesting that he would have
Angela Bassett.
Yes. He would have Angela Bassett as the captain and Rosario Dawson as the first officer.
That would be amazing.
So that was like his dream casting. So I don't know. I could see him just going with that and trying to get that as his first choice.
I would like to see some, what about some gay bridge officers? Like somebody in a position of power.
Yeah, we definitely need that as well.
Like, come on now.
It's been far
we can
too
have
long.
We can have a gay CEO in charge of one of the most powerful technology companies, but we can't have a gay captain or a gay first officer. Come on now. Come on now.
Yeah.
Is Paramount still in charge of Star Trek?
Sort of. But Rick Berman is not involved. So,
Yeah. I know a lot of people have issues with that guy.
Well, he ran the franchise into the ground.
Well, I never understood that. I guess I never really read into why people had such a problem with him. I mean, certainly I'm not a fan of a lot of the Next Generation movies, and especially not Nemesis, but how involved was he with the script writing?
And he was very involved.
Really? Okay.
And he was very conservative. So he, like, somebody would try to get a script through that had a gay character or something else, and he would just shoot it down.
Yeah. Was he responsible for killing off Data?
I have no idea. Probably, though.
That was not...
He's probably responsible for every terrible plot decision.
Well, you know what? Data dying in Nemesis is the least of that movie's problems, I think. It was sad to see him go, but there were other bigger issues.
Which and it was hinted that before...
Yeah, I know.
Anyways.
Yeah, I know.
And in the comic book that bridged Nemesis with the reboot...
Yeah.
Data had effectively come back in B4's body. Mm. So, yeah.
Well, depending on whether this new Star Trek series takes place in the... Well, first of all, assuming that it takes place in the current... Like, in the timeline that exists from the TV series, not the J.J. Abrams timeline, and assuming that it takes place shortly after, say, The Next Generation or DS9, maybe they could bring Brent Spiner back as sort of like a one-off appearance, maybe, but I doubt that would happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how believable that would be, though, because Brent Spiner's so much older now.
That it is going to be in the reboot universe. Just because they want to kind of sell the movies. And but it just makes a good tie-in.
That's fair, but I mean, they can do whatever they want in a TV series.
They can.
They're two separate things.
The thing is, the reboot effectively launched Star Trek to a bigger audience, for better or worse.
Right.
So,
well, I think
ultimately the best course of action is to maintain that universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it really all depends on
series in that universe, so that people go, "Oh, it's like the movies," and then they watch it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a tough one. Like, how do you strike the balance to please the hardcore? Like, how do you have enough elements in there that where it's like this is recognizable as a Star Trek series, but also balance? Like, how do we get new eyeballs? How do we get a whole new generation of people into this? And, you know,
well, I think ultimately it's going to be down to the storytelling.
It is. I mean, it's just like, just focus on good writing. I think the rest, you know, that this is where I think I have a problem with, you know, the people that are in charge, at least maybe the executives, because I think if they just realize that, you know, if we just focused on writing strong stories and having great characters that are memorable, that you can connect with, I think the rest of it will just fall into place.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I don't think it's that difficult.
No, it really isn't.
It's like throw in some space-time tears in the space-time continuum and tachyon beams, and there you go. No, I'm just kidding.
No, let's have Captain Proton and Dr. Chaotica.
Oh, God. Well, you know, for me, I really don't have any guesses as to where they're going to take it, but my biggest request, not that anyone there will hear this, but my biggest fan request, which would make me incredibly happy, is that if they went back to the DS9 format of let's figure out a big plan for these characters. Let's take all these characters through a long story arc. Let's have these major events with big payoffs in the end. Because frankly, I'm bored and tired of the sort of like episodic things where it's like, okay, there's conflict, then it gets resolved at the end of the, you know, 45 minute episode and that's it. And then it's never brought up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't like that. It's less believable.
Like, I feel like television has kind of moved past that.
I think so too.
It's not something that Brian Fuller has ever really done on any of his shows. Like any of the shows that he controls, he's never done that.
Yeah, but so. I think one can only look back on even Enterprise, you know, because obviously that is the most recent Star Trek series, even though it didn't live very long. But that series came out in what, 2001? So... Yeah. Even at that time, even though like Enterprise predates all the big like popular TV shows like Breaking Bad, right? But if you look at Enterprise, even Enterprise, once it got to, I think, late second series, might be the third season, where even they decided to go the route of telling like the big story arcs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, and you know, and wrapped up in season four. So I think you're right in that we've moved past that. And Enterprise was just like on the cusp of that sort of like early days of moving past that in television. And certainly with all the stuff on AMC, HBO Showcase, I don't think like a Next Generation-esque show would really work now. I don't think it would be popular. Because yeah, it's like you've seen all of that before. Like, do you think I'm wrong?
No. I don't think we will.
What are your fan requests? Do you have any casting choices that you'd want to see happen? Do you have any storylines or things that you'd want to see them maybe trying new things? I think it goes without saying the whole diversity aspect, obviously.
Yeah, they need to go much further than they've ever gone before.
I see what you did there.
But in terms of casting, I don't know, just make sure it's diverse, make sure there's new voices in there. The rest will sort itself out. Story, I want to see much less emphasis on time travel crap. I want to see much less emphasis on episodes that are like, ooh, something zany on the ship happened. Blah. Like, there were so many of those on Voyager, and it
was
just
way too many.
So bad.
Yeah.
I do not need to see an episode where Neelix's cheese makes the ship sick. Please, no.
What was that stew that he always made that people hated? I can't remember what it was called.
Leola root.
The Leola root. Right.
I get the impression it was extremely bitter.
Yeah. A lot of people really didn't like Kes. I didn't have such a problem with her.
I didn't have a huge problem with her. Neelix, I felt, was the most annoying character.
Mm-hmm. He had his moments, though. He had his redeemable moments, for sure. I think actually, like in the later seasons, in the much later seasons of Voyager, when he actually became more of a, even though he still had the role as, like, you know, feeding the crew, but when Janeway gave him the role of morale officer, I think he did a really good job with that. And even on the away missions.
Yeah. And when he started,
And he
had more of an ambassadorial role. That was
exactly.
Also really good.
Yeah.
Like he basically became kind of the emotional core of the crew, I would say. Like he was there for them when they had problems. Yeah. He would give advice and so on and so forth.
Well, and he showed some bravery on certain away missions as well, like leading. I don't remember the name of the episode. It's very vague, but there was one episode where they were forced to crash the ship and like land it on a planet. And of course, the first thing they had to do, because it looked like a pretty much barren planet that they weren't familiar with, Jane was like, the first thing we need to do is find shelter and food. And Neelix helped, and he actually took control and led a group of officers, and he actually like helped, like, you know source food and find shelter.
That would have been the one when the Kazon marooned them on
that dinosaur planet. So I mean, he became a much better character later on.
Yeah, definitely.
But that was
like season two or season three.
Yeah,
that was like pretty early on. But like the first two seasons, it was really like, oh my God.
But you know, I don't think CBS has to be really careful, because they cannot afford to let a new Star Trek series flounder for like I don't think it's gonna fly in 2017. Where like people have very short attention spans and low tolerance for shows, and if they're going to base the popularity on the ratings, on the Nielsen ratings or whatever, you can't let a science fiction show flounder for 2 or even 3 seasons and wait to get its footing. Like, it has to be rock solid from the get-go. Like, we've had way too many Star Trek series where it's like the first season it's just brutal. Even The Next Generation too, going back and looking at these old episodes, like, this was terrible. You know, it's like, we can't have this now. People expect, like, writing on the levels of a Breaking Bad, on the levels of Hannibal, on the level of a Walking Dead. It has to be amazing from the get-go.
Yeah.
And look, I know this is not easy. I realize it. Now, they obviously did a good thing by hiring, was it Brian?
Yeah.
Brian Fuller. So obviously, they've made a very good decision. Now, is he just writing, or is he directing, or what's going on?
He's going to be the showrunner.
Like the, I'm not sure, as in like a producer every single episode.
Well, he essentially leads the writing team. Okay. So he's probably going to be picking people.
Right.
I would assume he'll bring some people over from Hannibal, from Pushing Daisies.
Whoever did the
people that he's worked with before.
Who did the visuals on Hannibal, like the cinematography and all that stuff?
I'm not sure. He also has kind of a full plate. They've just started work on American Gods for HBO. So that's going to be
based on Neil Gaiman's novel. Interesting. Well, hopefully they don't screw that up.
Oh, so far so good.
I actually have not read American Gods.
Ooh.
I hear everyone keeps telling me to read it.
Do that.
Yeah. I like Neverwhere.
Oh, yeah. That's great. All of his books are great. All of them.
Yeah. He's one of those writers that even the books that may not live up to, say, an American God or Neverwhere, it's like I don't think he's ever written anything like so terrible that you can't read it. Like,
no.
All of this stuff is pretty much like either like a B+ or an A+. You know what
Pretty
I mean?
Much,
like, he's just that good.
Yeah.
Unlike Stephen King.
And then the scary lamp monster attacks.
I think, you know, honestly, to be fair, like, Stephen King is so prolific. Like, he just craps out a book every year that, you know, when you write that much, you're going to have a couple of stinkers. Like, it's like,
pretty much inevitable.
Yeah, it's inevitable. It's like, what's his name? Director/comedian, I'm drawing a blank. He's done a movie every year since like 1982 or whatever. Woody Allen, right? A ton of terrible movies, but he's also had some incredible movies.
And some problematic issues that we won't get into.
Yeah, I know. We're not getting into those in this podcast. But you know what I'm saying? It's like when you're that prolific and you're crapping out a movie or a book every year. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's just the luck of the draw because you're writing feverishly and you're writing so much. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have this like incredible best-selling work every single year.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. Like, you'll get lucky once in a while, but that's what happens when you go for like quantity. That's just going to happen.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what Brian Fuller does with Star Trek. Hopefully he doesn't have his hands tied behind his back by the studio and he can kind of do what he wants. It's like, for all I know, it's like Rick Berman suddenly reappears. Ha ha, you thought you'd got rid of me.
Mm-hmm. You know,
he just shows up as the Grand Nagus.
I love the Grand Nagus. I'm sorry. Even the silly. Quark. Oh, Grand Nagus. You know, one thing that I want to see, like, if it was me writing this show, I would make it take place in the same universe as the original Star Trek series timeline, and I would make it take place after the events of the next gen, like after Nemesis, basically.
Yeah. And that's what I would want.
Like, I think they need to go back to having a galaxy class starship, like the most badass ship in the fleet. Because Voyager was not that.
Post Nemesis, it'll be a Sovereign class ship. Because the Sovereign class replaced the galaxy class as the front line ship.
I don't remember. Whatever.
Yeah. The Sovereign was basically designed as a top of the line upgrade to the galaxy class. Okay.
So Sovereign class. Thank you for correcting me. So yeah, I mean, I would make it so that it's, you know, the top ship of the fleet and have a really skilled crew, but I would definitely want them to weave in things that we've seen before from other series. Like, it would be cool to see like a Deep Space Nine in the show, even if it's just like them stopping at Deep Space Nine. Like, I'm not saying the station has to have the same characters, but it'd be cool to have like a nice nod to previous series.
I think you could have some of the same characters. Obviously, Benjamin wouldn't be there because he's still like...
He's in Never Neverland.
Though he will return someday.
Someday.
I mean, there's like a lot of expanded universe novel stuff they could get into, really.
I haven't read any of them.
There is like a season 8 of DS9 that they did where he comes back, and then I think there's like a faction that goes to live on Empoknor and they like worship the Pa'raiths.
What about a Star Trek X-Men crossover? Actually, why don't we just throw in Scooby?
Would that be like the Marvel Star Wars crossover? Yeah. Why don't we actually throw Patton Oswalt in Parks and Rec?
Why don't we get Jean-Luc Picard to team up with Scooby Doo?
Row.
What's that, Scoob? Oh, we just lost.
And then they get assimilated.
The dog getting assimilated, that would be hilarious. Actually, speaking of assimilation, you just reminded me of something I wanted to pick your brain about. As far as the Borg are concerned, I want to see the Borg again, but I'm at a loss as to how they can make the Borg super threatening and scary again. And
well, there's actually a solution there.
Okay.
The origin of the Borg.
Yes.
So there is a book series that takes place after Nemesis called Star Trek Destiny.
Yeah.
And it's about a ship called the Destiny, and Ezri Dax is on it and a few other people.
Nice.
And basically it turns out that the origin of the Borg is a single member of a race known as the Seeliar. And the Seeliar were these incredibly powerful beings that had harnessed this magic shape-shifting molecule called a catum. And their entire society was built with catums. And even their bodies were made out of catums, I think.
So they experiment on themselves and transform like they're at like the cellular level kind of thing?
They were already like that. But the problem was there was a great cataclysm. They were attempting to seek out other intelligent races as powerful as themselves.
Mm, like Cybertron.
And a feedback pulse was sent through their transmitter that was looking for other races. It turned out to be one of them in the future, but timey-wimey. The feedback surge basically exploded their planet. And one of their cities got tossed onto another planet light years away in the Delta Quadrant. And it was wrecked. and there were only a few CLR survivors and some humans that ended up on their planet from the Columbia, which was the Enterprise NX-01's sister ship, Captain Hernandez.
Yes, okay.
So they ended up finding the CLR homeworld, and they stayed there until the cataclysm happened, and a few of the crew members and a few of the CLR survived. But one of the CLR sort of went evil.
Mm.
And in order to survive, she absorbed the catoms of the other CLR, and she infected the humans with some of her catoms.
Which are what, like the Borg nanoprobes that assimilate you?
Far more advanced. They're capable of manipulating matter at a subatomic level.
Wow. That's some crazy tech.
Yeah. So when she did that, she created the first Borg, and she became this consciousness at the heart of the Borg collective. The inhabitants of that world were soon assimilated, and it became the homeworld of the Borg, essentially.
Right, and then extrapolate from there, basically.
Yeah. So
that is just fascinating.
Yeah, it's this whole crazy story. And then the Borg start to invade the Delta Quadrant the Alpha Quadrant, because everything's weak after the Dominion War. So they use that opportunity to attack and begin invading.
Dominion War, it takes place much later, because we actually saw this in DS9. So I thought the Borg had been around for like tens of thousands of, or possibly hundreds of thousands.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they got thrown back in time, took over the Delta Quadrant.
And then eventually made their way.
Like, all the events you remember still happened and okay. Everything. Like, right. This is just their distant origin.
Okay, I see.
Where they started out on one planet in the backwater of the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
So then, fast forward, after post-Dominion War, post-Nemesis, the Federation is weakened. All the Alpha Quadrant races are weakened and crippled. Their infrastructure is broken. They're in the process of rebuilding, but it's not quite there yet. And the Borg seize this opportunity and begin invading the Alpha Quadrant through the Briar Patch, which
right.
Turns out to have a bunch of wormholes that were created by the CLR. And they like tie it into their transwarp hub or whatever, and they're able to come through as a shortcut.
What book series is this again? Is this like
Star
one
Trek
book?
Destiny.
Star Trek
it's
Destiny?
It's like three or four books.
Oh, I have to read this.
It's really awesome. It's a like, really awesome
like,
arc.
Don't you
it feels like a Star Trek movie.
Like, don't you think this is something that they could just like, we're talking about long story arcs like DS9. Like, this could be like two or three seasons worth of a show.
Oh, yeah. They could copy this wholesale. They could pretty much copy it.
They
wholesale.
Should do that.
Entertained.
They should do that.
And then at the end of the arc, it's super cool. I don't really want to spoil it because you're going to read it, but basically a really cool thing happens.
You don't want to spoil it.
It's basically game changing. Like, this amazing, crazy game changing thing happens, and then the galaxy won't be the same again after
right.
that.
Do, 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 do. Oh, wait, that's wrong. I still haven't seen Star Wars.
Oh, man.
I don't know if I will at this point.
You're running out of time at this
point.
I think
I'm just going to wait for the
Blu-ray.
Blu-ray
comes out in like March or April.
Blu-ray. I heard there were new updated Harmies. Despecialized editions.
Yes, version 2.5 of Return of the Jedi is out.
Yeah. Oh, they didn't. Oh, so right. Because of course, I was going to say, why didn't they do all of them? But of course, it takes time.
Yeah. A New Hope is already on version 2.5. I don't know if they've released a 3.0.
I don't know what version I saw, but the last time I saw it was 3 years ago.
Mm.
So I can only assume that subsequent versions are even better.
Oh, yeah. 2.5 of A New Hope is awesome.
I have to see this.
And The Empire Strikes Back one is pretty good too. It's a little further behind, but still really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Return of the Jedi, I think, was the most behind. So if they've released a new version, it probably brings it in line with the other two pretty nicely.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it. I saw one guy on YouTube said that it's actually kind of cool. I thought about maybe doing this, but what he did was he bought just some like generic empty Blu-ray cases and he printed on a color printer some really nice, like the actual artwork of those movies, and made his own little like little Blu-ray releases. Just burn them on Blu-ray. Pretty cool.
Yeah, not bad.
I'm still holding out hope that Disney's going to release, give the fans the proper, real versions of Star Wars.
I have
Wars.
A feeling they will. The money alone, like they know that people are going to buy it all over again.
Like, just think about the money, just the dollar signs.
Oh yeah,
the shelves will be emptied.
Yeah.
Like, it's like going to be crazy.
If it's something within their power to do, they are totally going to do it.
Yeah. They might even already be in the process of doing it.
The only problem is, I think the original negatives were actually destroyed in the process of creating the special edition.
Well, of course.
So it...
that was actually due to George Lucas's laser eyes.
Yes.
He burned it. It's like, nobody's going to work on this anymore. Just me. Just me.
Yeah. I am the creator of this. This is my creative vision. You cannot see it any other way than the way envisioned it.
I really always wanted to make the Ewok's eyes CGI, you know, just looks more real.
I always thought the lightsabers should really be walkie-talkies, like in E.T. I thought that would be really cool.
Screw the Ewoks, man. Nobody liked the Ewoks. Did you ever like the Ewoks?
No.
Fuck that.
That was the beginning of the end.
Yes.
It's just, see, the Ewoks are a gateway drug. You enjoy the Ewoks, and then all of a sudden you're consuming Jar Jar Binks' tongue lollipops.
It seemed that in your obsession, you destroyed the franchise.
You created a character so awful that people pray for its death. No!
If the Grand Negus was here, he'd be like, what's the, is it called the Great Marketplace? What's it called? The equivalent of their stock exchange.
Oh.
What's it called? Ferenginar. Remember the name of it. The Great, I think it's called the Great Marketplace or something like that.
The George Lucas versions are not even worth 3/4 of a bar of gold press latinum.
That's actually not half bad.
I think I need to be slightly more nasally.
Gotta be more nasally.
There we go.
And then his really hilarious, ridiculous laughing. It's kind of a cackle.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, man, I love Wallace Shawn. Why isn't Wallace Shawn in everything?
I don't know.
Inconceivable!
That word, I do not think it means what you think it means.
Iocane powder.
Yep.
Clearly, you have a dizzying intellect.
I should watch that movie again. I love it.
Yeah, I need to see it again.
It's good for a rewatch at least once a year.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that's just like everybody. I don't know a single person that doesn't like that movie.
Yeah, I don't either.
As you wish. Wesley.
I'll just roll down the hill too.
Oh, duh. I love that scene. That was very very Mel Brooks-esque in terms of like just slapstick, ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
comedy. I wonder how many people don't realize that Billy Crystal was in all of that makeup. I don't remember the name of his character. You know what I'm talking about? The healer
Philip
guy.
Max. Yes.
Yeah. Apparently that role was originally for Mel Brooks and he couldn't do it, or I don't remember what the issue was.
Yeah, there was something.
It was a very Mel Brooks-esque character, though.
Though, supposedly he made them laugh, like, so hard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, Billy Crystal, like, I can see that guy totally ad-libbing through that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he nearly shut down the production, apparently.
That's hilarious. I can totally see that happening. Hey, Deadpool and Batman vs. Superman are coming out soon, aren't they? Is Deadpool out already?
Deadpool's out.
Haven't
today
seen it.
Or tomorrow.
Hmm.
Hey, I think it premiered today.
I heard there's a new trailer for Batman vs. Superman. Is that true?
There is.
I haven't
yes.
seen it yet.
It's okay.
Somebody on Twitter actually said, well, actually, this looks better than the previous trailers. Was that your impression?
Yes. The opening part of the trailer kind of shows off Batman a bit,
mm-hmm.
and
nice.
He looks pretty badass.
He does. He's huge. Like, first of all, I gotta say,
The bit in the new trailer, it's actually reminiscent of the Arkham series.
Well, he
busts in through the floor and just like wastes all these guys, and it's just like, whoa.
This is the Batman we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Like just in terms of like Affleck's physical presence, like he's super tall and he's like just a big guy, like especially in this movie. And I saw some side-by-side comparisons of all the previous Batman actors, and all of them look laughable, but you put them all next to like Affleck's Batman, and for the first time I look at this guy and I'm like, I don't want to see this guy ever, because this guy is scary looking. He genuinely looks like he could crush your skull.
Yep.
Like, he's just big and physically imposing. And that suit, it's so refreshing not to have the stupid rubber motorcycle looking suit. Like, this guy has a suit that looks like he could actually move around in.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. But anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've definitely nailed Batman, but at the same time, he comes across like a weird take on Dick Cheney for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like,
The red capes are coming. The red capes are coming.
And the less said about that whole thing, the better.
He's almost seems like a gold member s character.
I know, it's like
it's so
going
wacky.
Way too far in the other direction with him. It's so bizarre. I mean, I'm willing to reserve judgment, but I'm still not convinced that this is going to be any good.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. But speaking of good things, what do you think about Full House coming back on Netflix?
I was not a watcher of the original, so I have no opinion.
I see. Well, I certainly watched it, and for nostalgia reasons alone, I'm excited. Did you watch the trailer for Fuller? It's called Fuller House.
I did not.
If you go to imdb.com, they are featuring it right now. I don't know if it's a newer trailer, but the teaser that they released a few months back got me excited, because it was really cleverly made, because you don't actually see the actors. All they show is the like impeccably reproduced original interior set of their mm-hmm. living room, and you just hear the characters talking as they walk up to the door. And they're like unlocking the door, and then the trailer ends. And it was just like, oh my God, all these memories come flooding back. And yes, David Coulier says, cut it out.
I have no idea what that means.
You really have to watch that series to get that joke. It's a long running joke. Anyways, well, I think that's it for this week. Unless there's anything else on your mind, anything that you wanted to get off your chest. Are you excited for Deadpool?
Oh, super excited. I'm seeing it on Sunday.
The Merc with a mouth.
Yep.
What's with his, I don't know how, the way they did his eyes, are those CG? Because how does he see through that?
It's CG.
Because it's weird, because I think it actually makes sense, even though it's not believable, because that character is so unbelievable. Like, the fact that he breaks the fourth wall, he's just like this living cartoon character.
In fact, supposedly there's one scene where he breaks the fourth wall and breaks the fourth wall like by breaking the fourth wall.
That's just brilliant.
He breaks 18 walls.
That is brilliant. Yeah. You know what would be even better if they actually, wouldn't it be awesome? You're just watching Deadpool in the theater, and then some guy dressed up as Deadpool actually walks in at that moment as he breaks through the wall. Like, it just cuts to black, and then an actor walks in dressed up as Deadpool. How awesome would that be?
And it's somehow Ryan Reynolds.
Somehow it's Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
You'd get a lot of frequent flyer miles.
It would just have to, it would be great because they could just randomly, pick out of a hat which theater he's going to go to. So it would be, a super rare thing. You would never know if you were going to get him at the theater, but then it would be such an amazing surprise.
Yeah, I could honestly see them doing something like that.
Yeah. When are they bringing back Matlock? Matlock!
I have no idea. Probably never. Actually, no, they did reboot Hawaii 5-0, so I guess anything's possible.
Yeah. No, Matlock.
Columbo starring that guy from Twilight.
Oh, yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Columbo starring Taylor Lautner.
No. No. Get out.
And everyone just dies a little inside.
Yeah. We should probably wrap. Actually, I had Matlock on my mind just because I've been watching Better Call Saul now that it's the first season is on Netflix Canada.
Ah.
And I'm sucked into it. I'm on the last episode.
Nice.
But he actually, there are a few episodes where he goes to a old folks community, like a care home, and dresses up as Matlock because he thinks, well, if I dressed up in a white suit, somehow it would connect with these people.
Yep.
And it was just hilarious.
I'm so excited for season 2.
Yeah. Oh, so you're done. You finished season 1.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. We watched it when it was live.
Nice. Nice. I heard there's word about season 2. Have you heard about this?
No.
But, well, apparently they are working on season 2, but I don't know if that's coming out this year or not. I assume so.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Season 2's going to premiere in a week or two.
Okay,
or all
something. Right. So it's coming out on cable TV.
Yep, good old AMC.
Yeah. Oh, it's on AMC. I didn't know it was. Actually, that makes sense because Breaking Bad was an AMC show, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see how they tie it into Breaking Bad, actually.
Indeed.
Supposedly the black and white interludes continue. Where it shows him in the future after the events of Breaking Bad.
Interesting. You know, he's a very different character in the beginning here.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually find he's a lot more likable before he goes.
So was Walter White.
That's very true.
It's kind of the same arc. It's like
I was actually
starts out as Jimmy and he becomes. Mm-hmm. Saul Goodman, just like Walter White is Walter White at the start, and he becomes Heisenberg.
So I'm just going to, we don't have any sound effects here at the impromptu, but I'm just going to say spoiler alert. If you have not seen Better Call Saul, I am about to say something that is a spoiler. I'm going to wait 2 or 3 seconds to allow you to fast forward or pause this and come back to it later. Okay, now we can talk. So I was absolutely heartbroken at how he was treated by his brother and by HMM.
I know. That was such a huge reveal at the end.
Like, first of all, the snobbiness of his brother and the friend to say, you're not a real lawyer. I was hurt. Like, I could feel how hurt he was.
You could feel
the
pain.
And you know what pisses me right the fuck off is that he is so unbelievably talented and intelligent, and I'm going to go on a limb and say more capable than most of those people at that firm, that fuck their Harvard University. Fuck what his brother said, because what it boils down to is the pure talent, and he is fucking good.
Yep.
And the fact that they don't recognize that drives me nuts.
Well, I'm sure they're going to get what's coming to them.
I hope so.
Because you didn't hear about them in Breaking Bad, so.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they just, like, I don't know, blow up the building or something. We'll see. I got to watch episode 10, I think, which is the season finale.
Mm, yes.
We'll see what happens. But yeah, we should wrap. Let me do the outro. You've been listening to The Impromptu. I'm here with Michael Norton, as always. And if you'd like to show your support for our show, there are several ways you can do that. We recently launched a brand new donation page. It's actually on Patreon, and it has now replaced our old donation page. So you can go to patreon.com/hologramradio. And any amount that you can pledge would be incredibly helpful. We're trying to reach our first goal, which I think is quite reasonable and modest, to cover our current operational costs. We have, I think last time I checked, we have two or three regular monthly donors. So thank you very much to those people that are supporting us. That's going to continue to help us grow. And, you know, once we get past the first goal, we're going to be able to do a lot more things, like maybe experiment with video, experiment with live streaming, and who knows what else. I actually just updated our Patreon page and added a few rewards a couple days ago. So if you haven't checked out our page yet, please go and do that. And I would highly recommend you subscribe to the show in iTunes. That is the best way to stay up to date on the show, to ensure you're always getting every single episode, so you never have to worry about missing it. And drop us a line in iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating or just a comment. But if you leave a rating, that is one of the best ways to help new people discover our show. You can also go to hologramradio.org/sponsors and click one of our Amazon banner links. We've got links for Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. And it is the exact same shopping experience that you know and love. No additional work on your part. But every time you buy something on Amazon, we get a portion of the sale. And again, all that stuff just goes straight to covering our operational costs, because that is basically what we need to get past at this point. I mean, we're a long ways away from having a even part-time salary for the people doing the shows here, but we can dream. We can dream, people. And if you'd like to reach us for comment here, you can reach Michael or I by sending us an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter @theimpromptu as well. And if you want to find out about some of the other great podcasts on our network, you can follow @hologramradio on Twitter. We're also the same username on Facebook as well. And we actually just launched a new show called The Right Gear. That's WRITE. And it's a show hosted by K Tempest Bradford about technology. And she's at episode 3, actually. And she's been covering some of the awesome new stuff coming out of CES and stuff like that. Not necessarily Mac focused, but it has a much broader, wide appeal. So go check it out. Go tell people about it. You may like that show. We also have other shows on the network that you may enjoy as well. And we're looking at bringing some new content as well in the coming months. Well, that is it for now. I think I covered all of our bases. It's only left for you, Michael.
So on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.